Two somber anniversaries approach in the coming days. August 6th is the date on which an American atomic bomb blew up over Hiroshima, Japan, in 1945. August 9th is the date the same thing happened in Nagasaki. Many communities around this country feature ceremonies and songs and teach-ins to mark the anniversaries. The 32nd annual Rogue Valley Hiroshima Nagasaki Vigil features several events under the umbrella theme of Stepping Back from Nuclear War, the World's Call to Peace. We have two of the planned speakers with us today. Kate Gould is with the Friends Committee on National Legislation. She'll speak on preventing war with Iran August 8th at the library in Medford. Kate Gould, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
And Michael Nieman is here in the studio with me. He's a professor of international studies at Southern Oregon University. He will speak on banning nukes on the same day and place, just a bit later in the same day. Michael Nieman, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And I want to start with you. As a professor of international studies, this is a good time to be studying international relations, certainly. And I wonder what your own thoughts are about particularly nuclear war and the possibility of it now with North Korea being quite so provocative.
Well, I think the question of provocation goes multiple ways. It's not just one particular direction here. So it is always a concern when states that have nuclear weapons are making moves or rattling their sabers, so to speak. So, but in many ways, it is not unique to this particular time. It's been part of our lives since 1945. So there were ebbs and flows, of course, but it's not like today is especially more dangerous than it was yesterday.
Really? I mean, yeah. No greater sense of urgency on your part, even with North Korea launching longer-range missiles?
Well, the way the North Korea story is interpreted in the United States is primarily a story of aggression, whereas I think what we fail to see that from North Korea's perspective, it is primarily a move of deterrence. I don't know. We don't have enough time to go into the whole story, right? North Korea is an odious regime. There's no doubt about that. But all regimes are primarily interested in self-preservation. So in North Korea, it's keeping the legacy of Kim Il-sung and Kim Jong-il alive. And that's this third generation now in power. And they see the entire world against them. They see the entire world take measures against them. The United Nations has issued sanctions and so forth. And they have looked at the examples of Iraq and Libya. I mean, for North Korea, the fate of Saddam Hussein and Muammar Gaddafi are telling. Both died in the streets. They gave up their nuclear weapons. They're dead. And for North Korea, the notion is that, well, we have to have a deterrent capability because it's the only thing that keeps us safe.
Okay. Well, thanks for that perspective. Kate Gould, let's talk to you about your talk on August 8th, which is about preventing war with Iran. Do you see the risk on the rise with the recent sanctions that the Congress wants to place on Iran?
We are certainly at a very dangerous moment. We are seeing that President Trump is perilously close to ripping up the Iran deal and setting us on a path toward war with Iran. And yes, those sanctions that were recently passed and now have been signed into law by the president only escalate the kind of confrontation that could get us into a war. And especially at the same time as we're seeing that Trump has said that it's very unlikely, that it seems like by October he will. Right now, the plans are to destroy the Iran deal by not certifying to Congress that the Iran deal is working, even though it is, according to the U.S. intelligence, according to the U.N. watchdog, nuclear watchdog, the IAEA, that even though there is this unanimous agreement among these experts and among these inspectors that the Iran deal is working, we're seeing more and more reports that the Trump administration is preparing to rip up the Iran deal, to pull out of it, and by claiming that Iran is not in compliance, directing White House officials to, it looks like, to manipulate intelligence or provide other kinds of false basis for pulling out of the Iran deal. And that would only, and then at the same time as the Trump administration is also talking about regime change in Iran, and that is escalating, and they're also laying out these ultimatums for another kind of deal with Iran that is all but impossible. For example, saying that Iran has to give up its nuclear program entirely or opt for a zero enrichment program, that all of those point to further confrontation and, yes, a real risk of war if we don't stop it.
So the Iran deal is meant to not perhaps permanently, but certainly for now, stop Iran from developing nuclear weapons. On that basis, it certainly seems to work. But then when you've got a president who speaks as often as he does about this is one of the worst deals in the history of the country and various other negative characterizations, how do you combat that? And is it more important to get a different opinion in front of the public? And if so, who's providing it?
Certainly, and that opinion is out there. We've seen that arms control experts, Nobel winning, you know, laureates, scientists, the nuclear scientists, the overwhelming majority of former military officials, that former members of Congress, faith leaders, that there's so many different groups that have endorsed the Iran deal and have said, look, this is one of the most historic, perhaps the most historic nuclear diplomatic achievement of our generation, that this is truly an extraordinary arms control agreement that prevents Iran from obtaining a nuclear weapon, that prevents the United States from waging another war in the Middle East over this issue, that accomplishes both of those goals with this diplomatic agreement. And there is, it's clear from U.S. intelligence assessments, from the IAEA assessments, that the deal is working. And as you say, it does put these extraordinary constraints in Iran's nuclear program, puts the nuclear program under lock, key, and camera, imposes these inspections, the most rigorous inspections that have ever been negotiated in history, and imposes those on Iran's nuclear program so that we have the eyes and ears of inspectors who are on the ground, who are watching every ounce of uranium from actually milling it out of the mines to using it in centrifuges to disposing it in waste. All along the cycle, we have inspectors on the ground that are watching this. And what is so important for the public to know is that this deal is working, diplomacy is working, the Iran deal is working, and that we have a president who has sidelined the State Department, is saber-rattling, is threatening to withdraw from the deal, and that's why it's so important that Congress really speak out, and as the Trump administration is putting us on a path to war, that Congress step up and put roadblocks and create an exit ramp to get us off of that path.
We are talking about war, past and potentially future, with Kate Gould and Michael Nieman. Kate Gould is with the Friends Committee on National Legislation. He'll be speaking on preventing war. She'll be speaking on preventing war with Iran August 8th in Medford. Michael Nieman is professor of international studies at Southern Oregon University. He'll speak on banning nukes August 8th in Medford as part of the observance of the Hiroshima-Nagasaki anniversaries coming up. You can join the conversation on the Jefferson Exchange. What are your thoughts about the world and the capacity for nuclear war at this moment in history? 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Michael Nieman, I noticed that you grew up in Western Germany, and mm-hmm. So here you have a country that had a large presence of American troops, so obviously a lot of Western feelings and thoughts there. Plus, you had the Soviet Union not very far away with a puppet government in East Germany at that time. What was it like growing up there, and how did that shape your views about nuclear weapons?
Well, I grew up in what used to be the British zone, so there weren't that many Americans around, mostly British soldiers. The Cold War for me was real. There were Royal Air Force jets overhead all the time. Sonic booms were a regular feature of daily life. On my way to school on my bicycle, I would pedal right past a Belgian anti-aircraft battery, missile battery. So it was real. And when in the late 70s, NATO decided to increase its supply of Pershing II missiles and cruise missiles as medium and short-range nuclear weapons to be stationed on German ground, to me that was a serious threat. Because my family, would be the first target. And so in that sense, it's been part of my life for a long time. So if I sounded a little bit jaded early on, it's in part because I've lived with the reality of a possible nuclear war for, 60 years. And so that's the reality, and that's why it is so urgent right now to take steps to keep that from happening again.
You wrote a short story, is that right, about gun smuggling in Africa?
Yeah, my other life, I write fiction. Yes, indeed. So,
does the fact that there are the presence of weapons and people getting weapons across international boundaries, is this? Does the fact that it shows up in your fiction mean it's something that's on your mind fairly often?
Things that are on my mind are the transfers of weapons, and they take place in multiple ways. So there are, of course, the illegal small arms transfers that happen all the time, but then there are also the big arms transfers. If you think about the Iran question, there's just a mega billion deal concluded with Saudi Arabia that the United States is shipping weapons to Saudi Arabia, and that is the key opponent of Iran. So in many ways, when Iran is building ballistic missiles, it's not targeted at the United States. It's in part a counterbalance to the weapons that Saudi Arabia is receiving. So weapons transfers happen at all levels. There are the legal ones and there are the illegal ones, but all of them are destabilizing.
Kate Gould, let's get your take on the idea of the arms deal with Saudi Arabia and how Iran would view that as a provocation.
Certainly a provocation. It's a provocation for Iran, and it's destabilizing for the entire Middle East mm-hmm. and really the world. Another thing that's important to note here is that Congress can stop these arms sales. So there's actually special legislation, the Arms Export Control Act, that provides the opportunity for Congress to step in, and when Trump is out writing this blank check to Saudi Arabia for these kinds of arms, including weapons that these bombs that are used to decimate Yemen right now. We're talking about the world's largest humanitarian crisis right now in Yemen, the world's largest recorded cholera outbreak ever, even bigger than the cholera outbreak we saw in Haiti a couple of years ago, that these bombs are bombing, you know, hospitals and schools and civilians in Yemen. So that Congress can step up and stop this. And in fact, we did have a very close vote. Earlier this summer, we had the Senate vote, 47 senators voted to block a particular bomb sale to Saudi Arabia. Both Senator Wyden and Senator Merkley did vote to block those bombs. And we were just 4 votes of passing that resolution to block the bombs in the Senate, so just 4 votes short. Next time this comes up, we do have an opportunity to win on this vote. So I think it's really important that Senator Wyden and Senator Merkley hear from Oregonians, yes, thank you for doing that, and we hope that you will continue to stand up against these kinds of arms sales to Saudi Arabia and also stand up in support of the Iran deal and prevent us from getting into another war in the Middle East. And there's real opportunity to take action. Senator Merkley is on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. Senator Wyden is on the Intel Committee. And, I hear from I've talked to these senators about these issues. I've talked to, a number of other, members of Congress in my work in D.C., and it's just what I hear over and over again from members of Congress and from staff is that they want to hear more from constituents on these issues, that on foreign policy especially, they just don't hear enough from constituents. So it's really important to make those calls, to send those emails, to get involved in local community groups, talking to members of Congress that you care about this issue, that you don't want to see more violence and more escalation and more risk of the threats posed by nuclear weapons, by conventional weapons, by all these weapons transfers that Dr. Nieman was talking about.
War and the prevention of war, the topic here on the Jefferson Exchange with Kate Gould from the Friends Committee on National Legislation. Michael Nieman is a professor of international studies at Southern Oregon University. They are both speakers on August 8th at the Medford Library as part of the Hiroshima Nagasaki Vigil in the Rogue Valley. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about this topic, 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Kate Gould, go a little further on congressional involvement in aggression, mm-hmm. because while the president does get to do the foreign policy, the fact is that Congress gets the power to declare war, and people on every single part of the political spectrum have pointed out the fact that Congress has largely ceded this to presidents several in a row.
That's right, yes. So the Constitution gives Congress the responsibility to declare war, to decide if and when the United States goes to war with another country. But we see time and time again that Congress has ceded or has shirk from that kind of responsibility, and we need to press Congress to step up to the plate and make these tough decisions. And Congress does have ample opportunities to do that. We see, you know, one method is through blocking these arms sales, and that is just, I mean, to really highlight the importance of that vote on the Senate vote that narrowly was defeated, but was, you know, got 47 senators to block, to vote to block bomb sales to Saudi Arabia. That was so important because usually these arms sales are just completely, are not questioned, and there is no vote. And so that is why defense manufacturers were lobbying so aggressively to support that bomb sale, because they knew that even though it was a comparatively smaller bomb sale, that it would set a precedent that if Congress actually started questioning and blocking these kinds of arms sales, then that would dramatically change the kind of landscape that we see in D.C., where there's just often given this free pass for arms sales and for executive overreach to launch these kinds of wars. We also see there's also opportunities for Congress. Congress should be stepping up to the plate on calling for and voting on an authorization for the use of military force. Right now, we're seeing that the United States has been engaged in these wars, fighting wars around the world, and yet there still hasn't been a thorough debate in Congress on these issues, and Congress hasn't taken hasn't voted on it, hasn't made these tough decisions. And so
the current AUMF
urge Congress to step up on that plate too.
The current AUMF is the one that dates back to 2003, isn't it?
2001, actually.
2001, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, after the...
Yeah, so there's two... Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So there's the 2001 AUMF, Authorization for the Use of Military Force, and it was passed just days after 9/11. And that authorization has been used to justify wars as legal justification under the Bush administration, Obama administration, and now Trump administration to justify wars around the world. And it is the 60 words in that legislation that is used for everything from these drone attacks in Yemen to warrantless wiretapping and other kinds of surveillance, and Guantanamo, to keep Guantanamo open. So it is high time for Congress to step up to the plate and have a real debate on these issues and rein in this blank check for war.
War, possible war, and the prevention of war, the topic here in the Jefferson Exchange with Kate Gould from the Friends Committee on National Legislation and Michael Nieman, a professor of international studies at Southern Oregon University. Michael, I know with all the globalization in the economy, mm-hmm. there is a belief, I think, rides out there that nobody's going to be dumb enough to start a war and mess up all these delicate interconnections. But what's your thought on that?
Well, I mean, that depends on the stakes or the perceived stakes. So this is not necessarily a guarantee. I know that in the early years of the post-Cold War era, there was this story that no country that has a McDonald's has ever attacked another country with a McDonald's, and all these facile notions. I don't think that actually means much. Countries will attack if they perceive that attack to be suitable and necessary for their particular goals and strategic objectives. So economics plays a role, but it's not the great equalizer that evil Immanuel Kant thought it would be, you know, way back in the 1700s. I want to just quickly switch, though, because one topic that I want to make sure we talk about is the treaty that was just adopted by the United Nations General Assembly. That is the treaty to ban nuclear weapons, period. Mm-hmm. And I think that was really a major milestone in terms of the impatience of the rest of the world with the nuclear states. And so that treaty was passed by over 120 votes, and it is open for signature starting September 20th. And once 50 countries have ratified that treaty, it will enter into force. And it is a very, very important document because it spells out the absolute prohibition to produce, transfer, use, manufacture, store nuclear weapons, period. And, of course, the nuclear states have not participated in these negotiations. One exception was the Netherlands, and they voted against it. It was the only country against it. But it sets the path, really. It takes us from the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty towards a new strategy to achieve the eventual abolition of nuclear weapons, and that's very important.
So one of the question areas is about the concern about non-state actors and, mm-hmm. and nuclear weapons. And so does this address that in some form?
This treaty is primarily about states, but it spells out clearly that it prohibits the transfer of nuclear materials to any other party, not just a state party, but to any other party. And so it covers that aspect. And once the production of fissile material is under control, under verifiable control, then the transfer to non-state actors becomes a moot point.
Kate Gould, can we get some thoughts from you on the treaty to ban nuclear weapons?
Yes, it's a very important development, and it really highlights the power of what can happen when countries come together mm-hmm. to address these threats. And it's a important achievement, and it really highlights the need also for Congress to step up to the plate in this matter. That we've seen that while Trump has explicitly threatened a nuclear arms race and escalating that arms race, that he's asked for more money for nuclear weapons and actually asked to cut money to secure nuclear materials that could be used by non-state actors. And Congress has went along and given it to them, that the House has voted to give more money for nuclear weapons and billions more for the Pentagon overall, and at the same time cutting this money to actually rein in this loose nuclear material. So it really, I think it highlights that, I'd say this again because I know that people can feel, it's easy to feel that powerless when there's these big issues and wonder how you can make a difference. But again, this is something that Congress has an opportunity to weigh in and really a responsibility to weigh in.
Kate Gould and Michael Nieman will both speak at the Hiroshima Nagasaki Vigil, the 32nd Annual Rogue Valley Vigil. They'll both be at the Medford Library Large Community Room on August 8th. Kate speaks at 3, Michael at 7. I want to thank you both for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thanks for having us.